Good evening, everyone. As I look out and see all of your beloved faces, it brings great joy to my heart, as it does every week. So welcome. And we join together in holy remembering, knowing that there is light, there is time, there are laws in which we participate, and there are also possibilities. And the possibility of the fulfillment of our own particular destiny for each one of us. The Christ candle is lit as affirmation of all of this, and to call upon the conscious circle of humanity to be with us and to gather and inform us. So we begin in the name of God transcendent, God omnipresent, and God immanent, the Holy Living Trinity. May we remember always that we are beloved of the Father, in the Son, through the Holy Spirit. And tonight we began in memory and celebration of one of the teachers who was personally very close to us, and that is Thomas Keating, whose birthday is March 7th. 1923, so he would have been 100 years old in a few days. What a gift this man was to us, this community, and to many of us personally. And we have many stories about Father Thomas, his life, his works. He visited the church many, many times over almost a 30-year period. He is the beloved author of over 30 books and many videos. The following passage comes from one of his later works, the book From the Mind to the Heart. He says, "The world desperately needs people free of cultural illusions and who are undertaking a dedicated exploration of true reality. Not just to know the material nature of things, but also to know the very source of everything that exists. An unfolding contemplative practice eventually becomes total receptivity. In that receptivity, one is aware of a silence that is becoming an irresistible attraction. For silence leads to stillness, stillness leads to surrender, and the beginnings to be filled with the presence. This presence, once established in our innermost being, might be called spaciousness. There is nothing in it except a certain vibrancy and aliveness. You are awake to something you cannot describe, and which is absolutely marvelous, totally generous, and which manifests itself with increasing tenderness, sweetness, and intimacy. The divine presence is inescapable. It fills every creative thing down to the smallest particle, every subatomic particle. So we are just a bunch of particles walking around that have been put together in a certain order by energies that are invisible and unknown to us. Using different languages, the work too would be totally in service of this granting of spaciousness or awakening and enlivening of these energies. So happy birthday, Father Thomas. We love you in eternity. So I'd like to bring to your attention that there will be another introduction to the work class. This time it will be via Zoom. And it will be held Wednesday evenings for 6 weeks, beginning March 15th. So if you are new to the work, you're highly encouraged to attend this class. There is no cost, and you can register either online or by calling the church office. So now let us participate and prepare ourselves for a conscious receiving, knowing that what we bring here matters, how we come matters, how we participate matters, for that is what we are emanating into the group. So now we place ourselves with directed attention and imminent trust and receptivity to the influences coming from the conscious circle of humanity. And we prepare to receive them with all the consciousness that we can muster. With back upright, heart open, mind quiet, body relaxed, noticing perhaps and then releasing all tension, constriction, resistance. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that brought heaviness, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy, all affirming, all denying, and we hold it as offering, reconciled, as food for being. We lift it and ask that all be transubstantiated in our being, as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God, as we ourselves are beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I hand over all complexities. I hand over all plans. I hand over all anxieties and small fears of my heart. I open to the divine human life that is mine. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. So now we will enter into Lectio Divina. And our passage will be read three times, with a silent pause between each reading. Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain wisdom of heart. Teach us to remember every further stage of ourselves is within us, above us. Teach us to remember below us, behind us, is the passive surrender to things, the inertia of the past, the habits of years, the mind of the senses, with its beliefs and appearances and passing time. Teach us to remember the I is the now of God's creative love. Teach us to remember being present, self-remembering in this moment is to be a channel of God's creative energy and love. Teach us to remember and give each moment of life the attention it deserves. Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain wisdom of heart. Teach us to remember every further stage of ourselves is within us, above us, below us, behind us, is the passive surrender to things. The inertia of the past, the habits of years, the mind of the senses with its beliefs and appearances and passing time. The I is the now of God's creative love. Being present, self-remembering in this moment is to be a channel of God's creative energy and love. And give each moment of our life the attention it deserves. Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain wisdom of heart. Teach us to remember every further stage of ourselves is within us, above us. Below us, behind us, is the passive surrender to things, the inertia of the past, the habits of years, the mind of the senses with its beliefs and appearances and passing time. The I is the now of God's creative love. Being present, self-remembering in this moment is to be a channel of God's creative energy and love. And give each moment of life the attention it deserves. May it be so. You are now invited to share with us what you received from this passage. Good evening and welcome, Frank.
Good evening, Marilyn. I love the lovely passage. So light was this plot, so many things that one could seize upon. But this one was struck by the last one to remember to give each moment of life the attention it deserves. Because if I could just do that, I wouldn't be asleep. That's what I continually fight in the front lines.
Indeed. Thank you, Frank. And Tracy, you might enable the spotlight feature as well. Jim.
Good evening. I heard being a channel of God's creative energy and love. And it reminded me that my intention for Lent is to let go of two things, to let go of the pressure I put on myself to achieve or accomplish something or to have a certain outcome go my way, and to let go of a punishment. If something doesn't go the way I want it to or the way I think it should, just to let go of that punishment. And it seems obvious to me now, but I just realized from a theme this week that it's really all based in this wrong relationship with time. The pressure comes from this wrong relationship towards the future, and the punishment is this inordinate or wrong relationship with the past. And so I just love this to be my higher aim, or the cause of the cause for the effects that I wish for in my life, to remember that my higher aim is to be a channel of God's creative energy and love. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. May it be so. I believe it already is. But thank you. Anyone else? Sabrina, welcome.
Thank you. I loved so many parts of this, all of it really, but one thing that really resonated was the beginning where it says, teach us to remember every future stage of ourselves is within us, above us. Mm-hmm. And that's very meaningful to me, because sometimes I'm way too hard on myself and, you know, try to improve in all areas of life. And I'm already there, you know, with God. There's no time. And this was just really meaningful to me. So.
Wonderful. Thank you, Sabrina. And thank you for sharing. I think it was your first time, is it?
Second
time. Okay, very good. So you're a good example here. Maybe someone else would like to share for the first or second time. Jim did. That was wonderful, Jim. Someone else, maybe a third. Or even if it's your 10th, you're invited to share, or 50th. Martin, welcome.
I heard inertia of the past, and I connected that with the accumulator, the idea of the accumulator. At first, when I heard it, I kind of was, it sort of had a little bit of a bitter taste to it. But then it moved into something very beautiful. If you think of things in the past, like some of the connections you've made with your loved ones, connections with God, Just some of the wonderful changing of impressions and incoming impressions, just accumulating the work. And that can be the inertia of the past, which can, you know, as Jim was saying, can be the cause of the cause to have the motivation and attitude for the cause. And that would be moving into something very beautiful.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Indeed. Thank you, Martin. Thank you. Rebecca, welcome.
Good evening, Marianne. That phrase attributed to Elia Delio about the I is the manifestation of God's love.
The now of God's creative love.
Yeah. Yes. And when I read that in the email this morning, that just, is a sparkling sort of, description of who we are. And it took me right back to when I was very new to the church, and in one of the mini classes that I took at that time, somebody said, probably Tim, that one definition of God was unmanifested creativity. And so then it makes perfect sense that the I now is, you know, the manifestation of his creativity. And I just, for me, who comes from a long history of the old man in the cloud variety of God, I just have loved that definition more than any other definition I've ever come across. Thank you.
Wow, wonderful. Thank you, Rebecca. Lauren.
I was struck by the amazing tree. Mm-hmm. It felt like to me that the words were as sparkly, I believe Rebecca used that word, but there was, it felt, the words were as sparkly as that wonderful tree of light. And I looked closely at it, and it seemed three-dimensional. And I suppose the prayer is, the more we are in the work, the more three-dimensional we might become. Three-dimensional in terms of our three centers, three-dimensional in terms of getting rid of the past and the future and being in that, in this now. And I just was so amazed at the more I looked at the tree, the more enveloped I felt.
Wonderful. Thank you, Lauren. We are enveloped, of course. And so, Kathy, we'll end this particular session with you. Welcome.
Hi, there's a lot of noise in my background here. I apologize. This week I found myself, I'm going to move into another room. This week I found myself out of balance, a little bit too much thinking, too much in my head and my intellectual center. And I set an aim to bring my attention to my moving center when I noticed this experience. And it was very effective in bringing a sense of harmony and balance back into my being. And one of the things that I noticed was a feeling of love. And I thought, what is this? What is this love that I'm feeling? And so this week, you know, reading the quote from Ilya Delio and seeing it in the perspective of time, I realize it's just about being present. Just that presence gives me the opportunity to be a channel of God's love.
Ah, indeed it does. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you. Well, what a wonderful foundation on which to build the rest of our evening. And now it gives me joy to introduce Peter, who will accompany us deeper into this mystery of time and now. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Marianne, and welcome, everyone. Good to be together tonight for this really huge subject of time, way beyond my pay grade, and certainly we'll just explore it together. As we begin, we'd like to just give the invitation to share what you've been learning and how you've been growing and doing your work, and I'm going to just share the screen to remind us all of our homework questions that we were pondering this week. Just to prime the pump in our sharing tonight for what you wish to share from your work week. Where in your life are you seeing recurrence? How may a change in attention affect a change of attitude and therefore the event pattern now and in the future? And the second question was, we have stepped over the threshold into Lent. What would be a practice for you that intentionally allocates time to a higher intention, and to which you can place your attention? And there was also a wonderful video to watch for this week's homework, but that's just to help us remember the homework in the last week's email and Ken's beautiful sharing and teaching. Who would like to share tonight? It looks like Tamara, please.
So when I thought about recurrence this last week and I looked at the email, it was so inspirational to me to talk about the lossy dough, because I think about when the law happens and things come into my life and I have to, or I have the responsibility or the opportunity to respond to it, then the sea comes up and I can look at that and I can observe that. And, you know, the sea could be something in my life that is subconsciously maybe changing or maybe reacting to the law. And so, in other words, if something comes in my life, I feel like I'm finally starting to see and self-observe, non-critically self-observe, maybe some subconscious things that come up, you know, to respond to that. And I'm really into right now in my life, what am I attending to? And that would be the dough. And so as part of that, because I'm not an emotional person, I'm more of an intellectual person. I'm starting to learn, and thank you for the email, so that I can say, okay, look, I've got some subconscious things that are going to interfere or like be part of my reaction to these life experiences. And so I need to be conscious of those. And so it's a beautiful thing. And it's like, you know, it's it's great to be able to see, okay, look, you know, I'm going to see these things, and, you know, it's okay. You can be okay with that. But I want to have this, like, in the right before the homework experience where you said, where the homework is, it said, look, you know, we have these, whatever we pay attention to is going to be, we're going to use to co-create our life on this earth. So I want to have that to be a very positive experience. So anyways, I look at my recurrences. They're like things in my life that are based on, you know, some subconscious things, maybe from childhood, whatever. As long as I can observe them, I can, you know, be open to the fact that I can be a proactive and consciously create, procreate, and, you know, be an evolving human being on this earth in a positive way. So thank you.
Thank you for sharing and putting words onto that inner life that is so beautiful and so good. And well, I can hear you working through the ideas, and I'm trying them on, and experiencing them. So thank you very much for sharing. Ashley, please.
Hi, Peter. Hi, everyone. So one of the things I noticed this week, and my sense of a pattern I have of hurriedness. I'm in a hurry a lot. Someone in my work group said, you know, this kind of habitual sense of urgency the week before, and that really sunk in. And all of the things that were given to us last week, the email, that PBS special on time, your message on Sunday was really helpful with reminding us that Lent is a time of rest. And you had mentioned something about each breath being a gift. And so I think all of those things together, I literally just stopped on Saturday morning while I was in the middle of my hurried chores. And I mean, really, it was like, I think it was a first conscious shock. I just, so many different parts of the work came in. I mean, I could see it non-critically. I recognized that I was identified, right? I think Nichols or Gurdjieff said being hurried is being identified. Just the recognition of, where do I want to, is this where I want to place my feeling of I? And so that's what I got to experience repeatedly since that's happened. Just moments of, is this where I want to place my feeling of I? And so it's been such a great gift. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for doing your work. And just that one little phrase, where am I placing my feeling of I, is very powerful. And, you know, breath can help us place it in the body and in this present moment. It's very powerful. So thank you for sharing and just integrating the ideas. It's awesome, Ashley. Thank you. Mary Leah or Britt?
Hi, good evening, Peter and everyone. I wanted to report on a couple of things that I've noticed about recurrence for me, and in particular, two specific recurrences that are very different and have called forth different work tools. So the first one is a recurrence in the moving center. I have a habit that I don't like. I'd like to change the habit, and the habit is, I interrupt people and I talk over them. As they're talking to me, I'm talking back to them. And that it's a long-standing habit, and I want to change it. So I've set aim. So the tool that I brought to address this recurrence, I've set aim. I have a deep wish to be more present, to be less scattered when I'm listening, to listen more deeply. And so that image of myself attending and being there now has really helped to create a wish and set aim. Then when I catch myself doing it, of course, self-remember, non-identify, and self-observe, non-identify, and self-remember. And sometimes I think back over the day, at the end of the day, when I'm doing my end of the day recollection, and I think, oh yeah, there it was again, and I can self-observe then. And it's kind of a time body thing. So there's a notion of time there, that it's never too late to go back and bring a work idea, bring that the work right to that place. Man, it's really windy here. I hope that's not making a noise on your end. But so I've named the eye, and now when she comes, it's easier to spot her, and I can pretty easily do inner and outer stop, because it's a moving center. The other recurrence is in the emotional center, and it's a really old recurrence. And it, the name of this one, the emotion that comes up, it's not that it's a habit or anything, but it's a constant or a very, recurring reaction. The one that comes up, the one that feels, is called poor, poor, pitiful me. She feels sorry for herself. So it could be lots of different incoming impressions, but the recurrence is in the emotional center. And so when I first started becoming aware of that 10 years ago, and I started doing the work, of course, the three, self-observation, non-identification, self-remembering. But what I'm noticing is that the work ideas that I bring up to meet that recurring emotional, poor, poor, pitiful me, has changed over time. Partly because I've gotten stronger work tools, but partly because I think the I is losing some of its grip. The feelings of self-pity are lessening. And the work tools there were just doing a lot of Program for Happiness work, asking, where did this come from? Where did this first start? And having some self-compassion. And so now when that one starts to come up, I can pretty easily do inner stop and say, yeah, we're not going there. And like Ashley said, make a decision to not put my sense of self there. So the last thing I want to report on is an event that happened yesterday, which was an amazing confluence of those two recurrences. I was in a meeting in a professional setting, and the person I'm with at the meeting is senior to me. And she's talking and she's telling me something. And I remember thinking, I know what she's going to say. And the one who rushes started talking, trying to hurry her along, like, yeah, I get that, I know what you're saying. And she said, in a voice just like this, she said, stop talking. I'm talking, I'm trying to tell you something. Listen to me. And she said it like that to me, Peter. And it was so, abrupt. But what I want to report is that the poor, poor, pitiful me one didn't show up. Like, I was rebuked, and she was putting me in, where I belonged. It was lawful. And I was so delighted. I wanted to start laughing, but then I thought, no, that will be taken the wrong way. So I sat really still and quietly, and the work principle that came up was, I owe you everything. You owe me nothing. And it was just sheer gratitude. So that's my report.
Thank you. Well, it's three very particular examples of doing the work, and I think it's really helpful for us to hear. And interesting how the last one brought the first two together, your aim to slow down and not interrupt, and then the poor, pitiful knee. I think that's a really helpful example of how the big, big ideas of recurrence can be put on very psychologically and practically in our lives. And I think that's helpful. So thank you. Yeah, sometimes I want to say shut up too, but I don't think that would be very helpful. Well, some people can get away with it, I guess. Maybe, let's see, Billy or Brad, please.
Okay. What I wanted to report on is actually the observance of the constellations for a couple of months, along with the this week's video, the NOVA video, and really just general comment about that, which is looking up at the night sky, and especially this past week when we had Jupiter and Venus and the moon all kind of moving around and triangulating with one another, really speaks to me an awful lot. It really talks to me about scale, and it really fills me up with humility. And that humility completely brings me to self-remembering or even holy remembering. It feels very sacred and very special. And so much of what is outside of my day-to-day whatever being. I just really love that. I've loved it so much that I decided that was going to be my practice that I add on for Lent, is to observe the night sky every night, weather permitting, as long as there's, you know, clear enough for me to see. Because I want to remember that always. And it's the easiest way for me to get in touch with that. With that remembering. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm heartened to hear that. And that practice, I know, has fed a lot of us. And by any chance, did you get a hold of the app? And use the app?
Yes, actually, I did. I was having a hard time using it because I didn't get it until later on. And every time I wanted to use it, it's kind of been a cloudy night, but I love the being able to, you know, see where everything is and identify the constellations, and especially when those planets were all lined up. It was interesting that they were all really lined up, but we could only see the two at that moment. So I love that. And in fact, we just ordered a telescope. I plan on spending a lot of time looking at the night sky.
Well, you know, it's just amazing just to look up and what it does for us. I'm wondering if you could give a little more kind of in insight into your inner experience of looking up, if you're able to see the difference between the intellectual center and the emotional center in that event?
Well, yeah. I mean, actually, it's kind of all three centers. My intellectual center is the one that's questioning, is the one that wants to know, you know, what am I looking at? What am I seeing? What are those planets? What is that constellation? And wanting to name things. Emotionally, it's everything dropping away. It's all of the what I thought was so important, you know, a few minutes before, just falls away. And there's just this beautiful sense of peace and beauty, you know, the beauty of it just cracks my heart wide open. And that cracking open feels physical at the same time. It's so hard to put words.
Well, you just did. Thank you. That's beautiful. Very helpful. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Billy. Hello, Brad. Let's go to Tracy, please.
Hello, good evening. Good evening, everybody. I'm also working with recurrence, and it's a big one. This is a big one, probably a lifelong recurrence It's a generational recurrence, getting really up to fear and security and survival, instinctive parts that are really kind of central to this personality type. And always choosing the, you know, the practical way or the safe way. I see it manifest at different degrees throughout my life, and you know, makes me wonder, you know, how many big decisions I really made a free choice around. I'm seeing it with my daughter in the next generation, and I've been working on a particular life change for several months now. And, you know, I felt like everything, I felt a sense of peace. I felt unshakable. And then just a couple of days ago, another big piece, second force came in, a surprise came in. And I feel, I'm feeling identified again. I feel kind of swamped out with emotions. I'm feeling it right now. I'm feeling kind of just that churn in the stomach and the lump in the throat. And they're just eyes that are a bit terrified. It's so humbling. It's so humbling to see. And it's struggling. It's really struggling. It wants to, my personality is struggling with this decision of my life direction. And continuing to come up with creative ideas around how not to take this path or why I shouldn't take this path. I feel like I've just been kind of hanging out on a ledge for a while, and I just need to take the next step forward. But the next step forward is feels like straight down. And I was reading in the Bittersweet book earlier this week, I think she said, we can be okay with death, but if someone asks you, do you want to die today? The answer is instinctively no. And so it's kind of wanting to kind of push off this perpetually and stay in this limbo mode and keep every door open and keep all the plates spinning. And that's just the, and that's the recurrence. That's the recurrence for this one. So I'm trying not to get too identified with my identification, if that makes sense. I'm trying to hold it a bit all lightly and just know that that emotional reaction is what it is. I can observe it, and I can give it some space to just allow it to work its way through, and allow wisdom to come back in. I wish to allow the right thing to happen here. I know that internal considering is always mechanical. And negative emotions are always wrong. And fear and terror, and even though I feel like, you know, I have eyes that are thinking it's almost like suicidal, that I don't have to, I don't have to believe that. I have a right not to be negative. So I feel the weight of it. For myself and for my mom and for my daughter and for all of the women in my family that have felt stuck in this, I wish to be free, and I know God will do the work, and I just lift it all up this evening.
Thank you, Tracy, and you've lifted it all up to our benefit and to yours. A very edifying report, very instructive report. It's beautiful to bear witness to someone doing the work and applying the ideas in their lives as you're, so to say, tossed at the sea in the midst of the storm. So may safe harbor reveal itself soon and clarity come. So I join with you in that wish. But in the meantime, happy sojourning in the work. Tamara, please.
I just wanted to quickly say that I have been looking to the sky as well. And I learned that the Big Dipper helped the slaves to find their way north. And now when I look at the Big Dipper, it just gives me so much connection and love, and knowing that I'm a part of something bigger than myself. And to think that, you know, the constellations were something that helped these people, it just gives me a lot of love. So thank you for letting us look to the constellations, and I never would have done it otherwise. So, and yeah. I look at it with love. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. It's delightful to know that Ursula Major, the Great Bear, is the Big Dipper, and that top right corner of the star is pointing to the North Star, and that's a really great signal for all of us to remember. The stars are leading us out of our captivity, some much more literally than others. Sabrina, please. And we'll have time for a couple more reports, trying to delay my PowerPoint presentation as long as possible.
Hi, Peter. Hi, everybody. Bear with me as I'm learning to speak the work language. I've been really struggling lately with something that is in my, I think it's in my moving center, and it's also in my intellectual center. And the word recurrence, maybe I'm applying it at the wrong level, but just genetic things that run in families. I know that the truth of who I am is not any of this external stuff, which includes medical diagnosis, which includes mental health disorder diagnosis. And I've been really struggling with that in that area. And the thought came to me about future remembering. You know, I've been trying, I'm working on this all my life. Future remembering, to say to myself, this particular disorder is on the obsessive compulsive spectrum. And so to say to myself when I catch myself, just saying, trust God. Because God is everything, and God can heal anything. And saying, trust God, brings me to the moment. And in the moment, I'm not lost in that identification where I'm so angry with myself for repeating a behavior that's destructive. So I'm trying to integrate everything.
And yeah, you have.
That has. So thank you.
Thank you, Sabrina, for sharing the courage to share, put that out there in the light. Bravo. The idea of identification is crucial, what you just were describing, that you're getting a grip on what that means to be identified in any given moment, or what part of you is identified, that not all of you is identified in that given moment. And then, you know, one of the things we do in our community is literally, I'll do this to myself. I'll put my finger in front of my face and say, this aspect of myself or personality is not I. I'm a child of God. This appetite, this disposition, this recurrence, this obsessive thought or whatever it might be is not I. It pulls me out of myself just a little bit physically to do that. And you know, that exercise has helped a lot of us, and I commend it to you. But little by little, and you'll not be the same because you just put this out there into a community that is with you in this journey. So thank you. Van, please. And I guess then we'll conclude with Bonnie.
It's Kelly. Oh,
it's Kelly. Sorry. Yes.
Yes. So I have a recurrence to report. This is a really, really old recurrence that I've been observing since childhood and becoming more aware of. And I had a breakthrough with this this little eye that really doesn't like to be criticized or found fault with. And when something, some criticism wants to come towards me, there has been this tendency to shrink inside myself in this fear of the criticism coming toward me. And I had a powerful experience. It was really the first day of Lent, and I just was facing a strong criticism from someone whose opinion I value. And I just found myself being in the force of that criticism and bearing it and feeling the strength of my being inside that was not vulnerable to the criticism, the part of me that is just a child of God and is perfect and wonderful. And since that moment, I just have not felt any fear when some criticism is coming. I just feel grateful for it, because any criticism is really just criticizing the personality that needs to change anyway. So I just wanted to report that.
Cool. Thank you for sharing, and bravo on the increasing the art of transforming incoming impression and of someone else's unpleasant manifestation toward you. And that's really the front line of many of our interpersonal relationships. So yeah, bravo. Not reacting to people's accusations, judgments, projections, slander, and not trying to defend yourself or, you know, make them wrong. This is holy remembering work. Mm-hmm. No question about it. We become a neutralizing force in those situations when we don't respond that way. They're expecting that. So thank you, Kelly, for sharing. Beautiful work.
Thank you.
Okay, Bonnie, we'll conclude with you tonight, please.
Good evening, Peter and everyone. I have an issue. I have a reoccurrence that I'd like to share. And I can divide it down into several sections. But the first is that with my aim of really perceiving as God sees, I started the day, one particular day, by looking at a myriad of things on my calendar. And I sat down and I, oh my gosh, I got so many things to do. I've got to get these done. And this reoccurrence is, I've got to get these things done. And it is so important to do each and every one of these things. I've got to prioritize those. And I started to feel my heart race and my body, and my mind was kind of overwhelming in there. And I came back and observed that I really didn't have to do that. As I found in the Time movie, the time slows down when you just can sit back and be and stop trying to control. Because in reality, I do not control, it's God's will. And I just sat with myself and with the idea of the potential that I have the will to do less and just be and sit with it and not do as much but just take on what I need to do, what is God's will and not mine. So I just kind of sat back, looked at, took a breath, just in, and weighed what it was that I had to do. Got up and pet my puppy again, as I always do, and enjoyed the time. And the answers came to me as to what it is that I needed to do. And I don't have to do all these things. I can just sit with it and just be, let the potential for doing what it is, I just take, let God figure it out. I can just be with it. So
thank you, Bonnie. Beautiful work. And enjoy the beingness amidst all the doingness. Well, let's give gratitude for all who have courageously shared tonight and who have given us a window into their inner world of work. We're all on the journey of being human, and it's helpful to hear what it's like to be another human being. I, for one, am edified and learn a great deal. Thank you. I'm going to move on to our teaching tonight and share the screen here in a second, if I can get this back. Okay, our subject tonight is all our lifetimes, which is a curious, you know, title. It assumes something, seems to assume something, which is very difficult to verify, that there is more than one lifetime. What do we actually mean by this? And I'll give it my best intention tonight to share what I mean by it and what I believe by it. The image was chosen because trees are so sacred, and they silently teach us so much about ourselves. I think trees are one of the best things about being alive and being on this planet. But there's a beautiful passage from the Psalms, Psalm chapter 1. It's the first psalm in the Hebrew Bible, a book of songs or psalms. You probably have heard it many times, but it begins out painting the two ways that are available for humankind, the way of being awake to God or to wisdom, and the way of the fool or the person who lives in a misguided way, missing the mark, self-indulging, uncaring, unloving. And this is my adaptation of the psalm. Happy are those who do not follow the advice or the wisdom of the misguided, or take the path that the unconscious tread, or sit in the seat of scoffers. But happy are those whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and on this law they meditate day and night. We're not going to talk so much about what the law of the Lord is and what it means to meditate it day and night on it, but just notice that's a totally different way of life than most people choose, to give yourself to this delight in the law of the Lord and meditate upon it day and night. Those people who do this, these people are like trees planted by streams of water. This is the most important part, which yield their fruit in every season, and their leaves do not wither. In all that they do, they prosper or they flourish. It doesn't mean that everyone flourishes in the same way, but there's a certain fruitfulness that can be marked by its own evidence in your life, sometimes hidden to everyone else but you. This inner life that flourishes, that bears fruit in its season and in every season, is a way of talking about the different lifetimes in one life, that we have many, many seasons, good seasons, bad seasons, hard seasons, joyful seasons. They come and they go. but no matter what the season, you, delighting in the law of the Lord, meditating on it regularly, are flourishing and bearing fruit inwardly. In contrast, the misguided are not so. Their lifetime is like chaff that tumbles away in the wind, chasing after shadows. So there are many people having the experience on this planet of miserable recurring lifetimes within a life. And they're miserable, they're sad, unhappy, they're in bondage to their own addictions or mindsets or ways of being. And we wish for their liberation and freedom and healing. At least I wish for every single human being to experience that type of healing and freedom. It's one of the reasons the work is meaningful to me. It does help in that freedom. And in a certain sense, that's what the law of the Lord is. Anything that is higher than you, that comes from above and lifts you up. And the work is certainly that, as is the word of God in the scriptures. Another example of what it might mean to have different lifetimes in one lifetime, different lifetimes in one lifetime, without getting into the whole recurrence or reincarnation rabbit trail, is to think of the hidden multiple layers of being in different bodies within one body. That the story of Jesus' transfiguration is hinting at. The transfiguration story is read on the second Sunday of Lent, and it will be read this Sunday, where James and John and Peter are with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration, and something of a different energy shield or field emerges through Jesus' physical body, revealing not just his present life, but apparently a prior life that might even be an eternal life or a pre-existence that we can't comprehend. In addition, there's two other people there with him, Moses and Elijah. And there's something about the presence, that there's more than this present in this moment. There's more than this present in this moment. The very thing that's more in this moment is a mystery. There's more than this present in this moment. And that is the different lifetimes that are possible, and the circle of conscious life that is beyond us, the cloud of witnesses. And so I wanted to ground our conversation tonight in scripture, because it's useful to see that the Christian narrative and the Hebrew scriptures give great soft landing places for some of these work ideas to take root and be illustrated. In other words, the work ideas are not in a vacuum. In fact, scripture precedes the work ideas, and the work ideas illustrate the scripture. Right order. Now let's get into the more conceptual teaching of this subject. Time and scale. The email today begins with the background, or like a canvas. It's that time is like the canvas of all things. And in Uspensky's book, the man that Ken Ely referred to as Mr. O last week, In Search of the Miraculous, he gives an account of Gurdjieff's teaching where Gurdjieff says that time is breath. In addition to teaching that time is the unique subjective, he talks about time being breath, which is an extraordinary phrase. Time is breath. But because they were deeply intellectual men, and they were trying to articulate their ideas to a scientific generation, trying to move it outside of the old mythical religious ideas, they inevitably developed this idea in a scientific way. And so Uspensky elaborated that if you begin with the breath of a human being, the inhalation and exhalation, that shouldn't be expiration, but The exhalation and inhalation take about 3 seconds when we're normally breathing, you know, just sitting here breathing. So if you calculate that, it's about 28,800 breaths in a day, full 24 hours. And therefore, about, you know, the average number of years, you just take that and take it, the average life is about 80 years. It's about, what does it say? In a day and a night, this amounts to 28,000 breaths, dividing 28,000 days and nights by 365, you get you 79 years. So that's the breath of a lifetime. It takes about 3 seconds times, well, just go 28,000 by 79, you get how many breaths you'll have in a lifetime. And they didn't stop there with human breath. They presented this in this way. And this is a chart that shows the duration of an impression, the duration of breath, the duration of day and night, and the duration of a whole life. So here you see breath coming over to man here in this column here, where I've circled it in red, 3 seconds for human breath. And then you go down for the life, it's 80 years. For a day, it's 24 hours. But what about for the cosmos, or the bigger cosmos, the regional cosmos, and then the full cosmos itself, whatever these words are, you can see that it's scaling up. And this is the nature of time, that it scales based on what you're dealing with. If you're dealing with a man, it's 3 seconds. If you're dealing with the sun, it's 24 hours. Here's a different way of putting it. Here's the event, it's a breath. For a cell, it takes 10,000ths of a second to breathe. For a man, it takes 3 seconds to breathe. For a planet, it takes 100 years to have an exhalation and inhalation. You know, I don't know how you could verify that, but it's very interesting. For a star or the sun, it takes 3 million years to breathe. And for the galaxy or like the solar system, it takes 9 to the 10th power. So 9 times 10 to the 10th years. All this is to say, it's very interesting and intellectual and conceptual that everything's breathing, that time is breath. And in every dimension of this universe, there's some form of breathing going on that could be measured, and that's the essence of time. To what extent this is useful to you on a practical basis is more evasive, you know, it's more elusive for us to apply. But what it does teach me is that when my breath leaves this body, perhaps there's another kind of breath that I'll experience in a different dimension. This isn't the only kind of breath that we have. And that is very encouraging. What do angels breathe? You know, what do higher entities breathe? It's just something to ponder and put in your heart and wonder about. That's time and scale. Then we wanted to talk a little bit about what the email describes as remembering our lifetime. And, you know, this is from the email, and I just want to reiterate it. To use our memory to remember who and how we have been throughout our lifetime is a practical way of claiming our time and fully embodying our lifetime. So a lot of people don't want to remember their lifetime or block things out in their memory or have experienced a trauma that blocks it out. But what I'm suggesting is that one of the ways in which we can discover the various lifetimes that we've lived in our lifetime is to remember our life and to do so very consciously and carefully and lovingly, and to go deep into our life, as deep as our memory will allow. This will allow oneself to possess an understanding or a purview of the totality of one's life in its broad wholeness and grandeur of particularity, to see the sweep or arc of one's lifetime narrative without losing the precise, even moment-to-moment awareness of how one is being and how one has been in each and every moment, to see the totality of one's lifetime in, as it were, the blink of an eye, as well as to linger with one particular memory in awe and gratitude for one instant or moment in time. That's a lot of words, but I think it very accurately describes what is possible for us through our memory. And this is one of the aspects of holy remembering, that to remember our life is in many ways to remember the lifetimes or the seasons or the cycles within our lifetime. And it may not be that you've lived many, many lives in terms of reincarnation or anything like this, or recurrence. You may not have any ability of accessing that or verifying that. But perhaps there's hints as you look at your life and remember your life and go deep into your memory. Perhaps there's hints that will help you kind of be like guideposts for your future choices. And this is where it's so powerful, where the waves kind of meet, the past and the future meet together. And our memory and our exercise of remembering our lifetime can help us make choices for the future, including making decisions like Tracy is describing. And you can feel the confluence of lifetimes. You can feel the lineage of her mother and perhaps her grandmother. You can feel the confluence of this time just really there in her decision to make a courageous step out of the cycle. And for many of us, we don't experience fruitfulness because we're locked in the circle versus being the spiral that enables the tree to grow. And that's the every season part where the fruitfulness is, not just the same season over and over again, but every new season, even though the season is comprised of the same qualities of time, summer, fall, winter, spring, summer, fall, winter, spring, but they're not the same. They're different each season. So memory and remembering become very powerful ways of discovering your hidden lifetimes within your lifetime and how they interact with each other and shape each other. Many people have not released the past so that it's shaping their present in an undue way, like a gravity. Many people have not come into reality about their past, and so it prevents them from experiencing their destiny, to be honest, to confess, to reconcile, to be reconciled, to do inner work of releasing, forgiving, letting go. This is deep holy remembering work, and it really frees people to be their best, so to speak, what is possible for all of us. And that's the power of forgiveness, and that's the power of freeing by seeing and remembering. So that's the gift of remembering and its importance in our journeys. Then there's the other side of the coin, which is the gift and the importance of forgetting our lifetime, which we'll dedicate a whole year to next year, holy forgetting, which is just as important as holy remembering. But truths are revealed in progressive ways, not all at once. And the revealing and receiving of truth takes time. The relationship between truth and time at a psychological level can be seen very clearly in the work teachings on buffers and seeing of one's chief feature. In other words, sometimes we forget who we've been, because to see or realize who we've been would undo us. I mean, if we were to read the full book of your life, if you were really to see yourself how other people see yourself, it might overwhelm you or fry you psychologically. So there's a gentle mercy in how God works in allowing us to see things about ourselves, and certainly not to tell someone about themselves and rob them of the opportunity of that transforming moment of doing their own work, of seeing the thing that they can't see, but you can. That's the wonderful thing about a spiritual community, is that most of us can see other people's logs in their eyes, but we miss our own. And that seems to be kind of the way it is. But if as long as I don't say, hey, you've got a log in your eye, and I concentrate on the fact that I probably have a log in my eye, and that may be the reason I see the log in their eye, then I focus on my work and trust that God will bring about their revelation in the perfect time so that they can forget it and move forward. So holy forgetting is a beautiful thing, a part of our discovering and releasing of our past lifetimes. That is to say, the canceling of our debts and the canceling of our karma. And you make a payment, you do something, and it literally sets you free, just as free as those beloved slaves were set free, you know, when they were bought by someone else. They're set free. It's a terrible analogy, but it's that deep and profound that when we're set free from the past, it's as if it's forgotten forever, as far as the East is from the West on a spiritual dimension. The karma is paid. And by the way, you know, this is where the best religion mediates humanity back to God through a mediator, so you don't have to be the mediator. And this is the good news. This is what's good about the good news of the gospel, that as much as you might just kind of writhe against the notion of the blood offering or the sacrifice of the crucifixion, the truth is, and Rudolf Steiner really got this, Gurdjieff understood it very much as well, but there's something about the death of the innocent one named Jesus that did something not just for a little group of people, but for all human beings, the whole species. And that this is a deep forgetting. The crucifixion allows the forgetting of all that had been and all that will be. And it's a ridgepole for the transformation and the release of our karma as a species. And of course, it's still working itself out. And again, you go back to the timeline of breath. It seems like it's been a long time since the crucifixion, 2,000 years, but in truth, it's just like a blink of the eye. And so eras and generations and whole cycles of time have to pass for evolution to take any, have any kind of meaningful, you know, awareness or evidence of its progress. It just takes a whole long time. But again, these are just my ideas. Remembering, forgetting, and then the importance of presence and distance in our understanding of time and lifetimes. One of the greatest markers of, you know, discerning your lifetimes is where you were physically and in those times. So, you know, you can kind of bundle your life up by the homes you've lived in or the cities you've lived in or the people you've been with or the schools that you were at or the jobs you were in. And so these little compartments become ways of GPSing your life and triangulating kind of your own story of physical presence in time and space. And this gets at one of the most profound and mysterious things about the gift of time and space and how they go hand in hand. And that is through the gift of memory and where we place our consciousness in our relationship, that we can actually have this capacity of mind, memory, and imagination, the totality of consciousness, being placed with a beloved one so deeply in your heart that even though they might be in Africa working, you can feel their presence and you can send your presence to them, and you might even sense someone else's presence with you from far, far away. This is the gift of being present beyond time or through time, not limited by time and space. And it's a profound thing. And I'll just say that this is a basic, elementary, conceptual way of beginning a conversation of how some of the more higher level beings on this planet teleport and are in places in multiple places at the same time, or many stories of holy men being in two villages at the same time. I wouldn't want to press this so much, but the dimension of time as a law, one of the laws of one of the 48 laws on this planet, begins to be permeable by beings of higher levels who aren't under these 48 laws, who are under fewer laws. One of the first laws that higher beings begin to experience freedom from is the law of time and distance or place. Time and space dissolve at higher levels, which is why Jesus is able to transport instantly through a door without opening it, or he's being caught up in a crowd and instantly he's gone. walking on the water. And you could go on and on and on in every tradition, including the Native American or indigenous stories of this sort of thing happening for highly developed beings. It's not something to necessarily aspire toward, but what I'm suggesting is that it's something that we can make practical in our lives, of sending energy and conscious love toward our beloveds who are separate from us physically. And even in this moment, something we're learning how to do through Zoom, to be present to one another in a conscious way that a lot of us are uncomfortable with and we'd rather be in the same room. However, something greater is emerging through this level of consciousness because it's less physical and more spiritual, and it can be. It's much more at the level of consciousness. It's certainly one step up from being in the physical sanctuary. We have to be present to one another in a conscious way in this sanctuary. Or perhaps you're watching something on your screen right now while you're listening to me. That could be. So you're missing out on the experience of being at that higher level. So lastly, lifetimes within a lifetime, this sense of experiencing the relativity or subjectivity of time throughout the phases and stages of our life. What I wanted to point out here is that this inward growth that we experience of our being is probably the closest we might be able to see the phases of stages of our different lifetimes within our life. We see with hindsight as we look back, holy cow, it's as if there's huge chunks of my life where I'm a different person, where I was living a different lifetime. And praise be to God for keeping me moving forward through all that, where I could have been shipwrecked or lost. I was not. I was delivered and I moved through and I was liberated and set free. It's something of a mystery of a holy remembering to remember sooner and sooner so not to miss our destiny or the fullness of what is possible for our development. And this is one of the important reasons why we remember, so that we can be set free sooner and sooner to not miss the possibilities of the next thing coming and not to hold on so tightly to the past. Grieve the past, process the past, be with the past, celebrate the past, but this is not the past. You are not the past. And the more we pine for the past, the longer we will cease to receive the goodness of the possibility that awaits us in the future, being drawn toward it. And a lot of human beings just are asleep in the past, lulled to sleep by the past. It's a nepenthe of its own power. I think that's it. I did want to just give this resource, and I'll post it in the chat, and I apologize for the last time I did this. I didn't copy and paste it correctly, but I will get it right this time. But I'm just going to send it back to Marianne. And I thank everyone for your attention and for being a part of this community of the Circle of Conscious Life on this earth. Look in the chat and I'll post that link. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. What an extraordinary gift and much to be pondered. So we take it all into our hearts and affirm together the prayer of God's love. That God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.